Right from the beginning, it seems as if Rhiannon Giddens was destined to be distinctive.
My mom was reading the Mabinogion when I was born, which is the Welsh mythological epic. It's actually an old, old Welsh character in this cycle, and she was quite a strong woman and a very, very interesting woman. And so I did find that inspiring. When I was a kid, I read the stories, and I just thought it was really cool that I was named after her.
Giddens grew up in Greensboro, North Carolina, where the music she heard from her parents' record collection tended to be Joan Baez and Peter, Paul, and Mary. Later on, she went to Oberlin Conservatory to study opera. It was there she discovered the more traditional African-American and Celtic dance music that was to become the core of the Carolina Chocolate Drops. The discovery was almost an accident.
Jane Austen is the culprit. I was at Oberlin and I saw a flyer for, I thought it was English country dance, which, you know, that's what they do in the Jane Austen novels, and I'm a huge Jane Austen fan, and I wanted to learn how to do that. So I went, and it was a contra dance, but I stayed anyway, and I really enjoyed it and got hooked on it. So when I came back to North Carolina, I looked for the local dances, and down in North Carolina, you know, the music for the contra dance is very much old-time. There's a lot of old-time music, you know, being played for them. And, you know, also Celtic music and Canadian music, you know. It was really my introduction to trad sort of instrumental music and the banjo as a clawhammer instrument, as a dance instrument, you know, not as a bluegrass instrument. And I absolutely fell in love with it.
Were you sort of interested in both the Celtic and the African-American traditions simultaneously?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, the first band that I was in when I came home was a Celtic band. So I was interested in that first, and as I was interested in that, I started learning about the banjo. You know, I got African Banjo Echoes in Appalachia, the book by C.C. Conway, and learning that the banjo is actually an African-American instrument, which I did not know. And then it kind of just slowly just started, the obsession with it sort of took over. But I got very heavily into particularly Scots Gaelic music, you know, and the Scottish tradition, because there's a large settlement of Scots Gaelic Highlanders in the Cape Fear region of North Carolina, and there was interactions between them and people of color, you know, natives and blacks, and there were blacks who spoke Gaelic, and so I was very fascinated with those kind of cultural interactions. Of course, my name being Welsh, and me always being aware of, you know, that sort of pan culture of the sort of the Celtic languages. And so I'm really happy that I was exposed to all of that, because I really feel like, you know, that's the story of America, and it's much more complicated than we kind of give it credit for. So I like knowing these little pockets of things, like the black church in North Carolina calling for a Gaelic preacher, a Gaelic-speaking congregation. You know, I love knowing those little tidbits, because it makes American musical history so much more interesting.
Giddens formed the Carolina Chocolate Drops in 2005 with fellow string band music enthusiasts and historians Dom Flemons and Justin Robinson. The group won a Grammy for Best Traditional Folk Album in 2010 for their release called Genuine Negro Jig. After nearly a decade performing as a member of the Chocolate Drops, Giddens' solo career began with the same kind of serendipity that drew her to traditional music.
Whoa!
Giddens was asked to perform at a concert event following the release of the latest movie by the Coen brothers. She chose this song, originally recorded by operatic singer turned folk icon Odetta.
That ring like mine, boy. That ring like mine.
Legendary producer T-Bone Burnett, whose credits include Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And the recent collaboration between Robert Plant and Alison Krauss, was in the audience.
I was very nervous about it. Never sung Waterboy. I'd never performed it in front of people. I just, you know, I did it, and I was just, like, so focused was on, don't screw this up, you know? This is a great, you know, T-Bone's asked you to come do this, like, you know, don't screw it up. And got done, and I was like, okay, I didn't screw it up, great. And so I just went and started jamming, you know, backstage, and I didn't really think anything of who was in the audience. And so T-Bone literally was right after the show. He was like, we have to capture this energy. I see where you are and what you can do, and we need to do this as soon as possible. I didn't expect it, and it was literally like, my label was like, you know, T-Bone wants to call you about doing a solo record. And I was just like, what? I mean, that's literally how it happened. I mean, it was just like, it was nuts. I was like, oh, okay. You know, because I was planning the next Chocolate Drop record. You know, we'd been touring all year. We had a whole year set up as a Chocolate Drop, and I wasn't really thinking about a solo project. But you know, when T-Bone Burnett comes and you have the full support of your label, and he says, I want to do a solo record with you in the next 2 months, like, you say yes. So I said yes.
So T-Bone has a pretty high profile and definitely has a sensibility, but you also appear to have a very deep and very broad sensibility. How do you two work together?
Well, you know, it's really funny because I was expecting him to tell me what to sing. And he said, what do you want to do? What's your dream record? And I about had a heart attack. And luckily I had this list of songs that kind of hadn't been fitting in the Chocolate Drop world. I'd had this conversation with Twyla Tharp about the woman in Americana music. And, you know, so it's kind of coalesced around this idea of paying homage to those women who came before me, you know, within the roots music. So I sent this list off to him and he said, great, add to it and let's do it. You know, I mean, it was that simple. It wasn't easy, but it was that simple. And so in the studio, it was like he didn't tell me how to sing stuff. He just guided a little bit. And he had trust in my instincts and I had trust in his instincts. So I thought it was a really good partnership.
Were there any discoveries that you made in the process of putting together the song list?
You know, there were just, it was such a great excavation process. You know, there were things I automatically knew I wanted to do. And then there were things that I stumbled upon as I was sort of adding and deepening this list, you know. T-Bone brought the Don't Let It Trouble Your Mind, which kind of kicked me into really early Dolly Parton. I'd heard mid Parton and later Dolly Parton and a little bit of the Dolly and Porter, but I hadn't really gotten into her early catalog. Now I have all of her early stuff and I'm totally obsessed. You know, just stumbling upon that YouTube of Nina Simone singing Tomorrow's My Turn, which is like one of the most beautiful performances I've ever seen on film.
Tomorrow is my turn. No more doubts, no more fears. Tomorrow is my turn. When my luck is returning, all these years I've been learning. Fingers from burning. Tomorrow is my turn.
If there's, I guess, any one historical figure who seems to be kind of the spiritual foundation for Tomorrow is My Turn, it's Nina Simone. And she also was originally a classically trained musician.
Yeah.
She made her mark in non-classical music. That was a complex experience for her, I guess would be the nice way of saying it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Can you describe how the music world is different for you than you think it might have been for her?
I feel like I have so many more options than Nina Simone did. You know, just on the acceptance front, just on the, you know, I've been able to do, you know, I just sang Summertime in the original key, you know, with the NC Symphony this past spring, you know, with Branford Marsalis playing improv horn over it. You know, I get to do that and do what I'm doing. You know, I feel like I'm very lucky in that, you know, today's world, the classical world is a bit more porous than it used to be. You know, it's got more, there's more points of entry. I mean, it's definitely undergoing great change, and it's, you know, there's some emergency stuff going on in the classical world, but the way that the music industry is right now, you know, the artist has as much control as they want to take, you know, in some ways, and not in others, but in some ways. And so I do think that the environment is vastly different. You know, I think she would find it more conducive to what she did, you know, so well.
Have you seen the documentary about her?
I haven't seen it yet. Everybody's telling me I need to. I mean, I've read her autobiography and I've read the biography, you know, so I know her life. But I would love to see the documentary. I just haven't had a chance.
It sort of makes the point that her career derailed in part because of her political involvement, that was just too complicated for people to deal with in the 1960s. You also have political concerns that kind of inform your public image, the things that you do. Do you think that political involvement is still dangerous for a musician's career?
Yeah, I mean, and I can definitely see that for her career, you know, and the thing was that she wasn't just political. She was fiercely, you know, she was very fierce with it in a beautiful way. Which was kind of fearless, but it did. I think it absolutely did have repercussions for her career. I think today there's a lot of the same fears. You know, I mean, look what happened to the Dixie Chicks. And this was a very, you know, very minor comment they weren't talking about policy or any of that stuff, you know. I really hate the way that we get branded as political if we dare to make a statement about what's going on. You know, I want to continue being able to say things and to respond to what's going on in my world, you know, but I don't want to be labeled as a political songwriter, because that's not what I am. So yeah, I mean, I think it's a balance, but like at 38 years old, you know, I'm like, if I don't say something about what I believe, you know, with my music, then I don't really know if I can call myself a folk singer, and I don't really know if I want to continue making music if I can't say something that I really, you know, that I really believe in.
Up above my head, I hear music in the air. Up above my head, I hear music in the air. Up above my head, I hear music in the air. I really do believe there's a heaven somewhere. Up above my head,
up above my head,
I hear singing.
This is Rhiannon Giddens from her solo release, Tomorrow Is My Turn, doing a song by Sister Rosetta Tharpe. The recording represents a surprising range of musical genres, including songs associated with Patsy Cline, Geshe Wiley, Dolly Parton, and Libba Cotton. It concludes with a song by Giddens herself, written as a response to her experience working with T-Bone Burnett on the new Bob Dylan basement tapes with Elvis Costello, Marcus Mumford, and members of My Morning Jacket.
When I came to Angel City, I was on the run, blinded by my own pity. I was nearly done.
You know, the Angel City, which was like one of my first emotional responses to something that happened to myself. It's been really great that people have been responding to that and to some of the other things that I've written, and it's been really encouraging. You know, T-Bone's had a big hand in encouraging me to write more, and I have got now kind of a little circle of mentors, you know, who've been really encouraging. And you know, I think the next record will definitely have more of my originals. I think the thing will be finding a balance between myself as an interpreter, which I think is still a very important part of my musical personality, and myself as a songwriter, which is, you know, still fairly new. I don't feel like I need to foist like a million of my songs onto the world quite yet.
Well, speaking as a fan, foist away.
Well, thank you. You're going to regret saying that.
But looking very much forward to hearing you at the Castle Theater in just a couple of days. Thank you very much for your time.
Absolutely. Thanks. It was a really lovely conversation.